Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'll be guiding you about the battle space of the war of ideas. I'm going to be doing so with several of the best in the business, starting with Bing West, a former Assistant Secretary of Defense, a man I've had the privilege of working with for many years, who has distinguished himself in combat as a Marine veteran, as a man who understands his way around the policy community, and most recently as a man who has become a first-class raconteur of what is going on in our military and in the wars we're fighting and in the strategic environment in which we find ourselves. We'll be talking about his new book. We'll also be discussing with him where we're going in Afghanistan, Iraq, and perhaps with Iran. And then we'll be talking with our friend Bill Gertz, who is coming to us from the Washington Times geopolitics desk. He'll be giving us a sense of the latest from Jim Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, on China, the threat it poses to us, a new capability we've just learned about that is quite ominous, and the extent to which we are going to find ourselves dealing with a nuclear-armed Iran. So all of that is up ahead. First, I want to talk a little bit about what happened yesterday in Congressman Pete King's hearing. It was a very salutary exercise, it seems to me. It was the start of a serious conversation about a topic that has long been deemed politically untouchable. Namely, is there a problem within the American Muslim community? And I think the answer is obviously there is. We heard in the course of the testimony powerful statements by relatives of those who were recruited, indoctrinated, and sent to jihad in the name of Sharia. And we also heard, I think, some very critical testimony about the roles being played by the so-called Muslim American leadership organizations in all of this. The extent to which they are suppressing cooperation with the U.S. law enforcement community. They are pressing politicians and policy makers and the press to observe what amount to Sharia blasphemy laws, so as to give no offense to Muslims, essentially say nothing about the sorts of activities, the sorts of threats, the inherent character of Sharia, which will, if left unchecked, constitute a mortal peril to our government and our Constitution and our way of life. Congressman Chip Kravick spoke about the problem in a very direct way in his inquiries to Sheriff Lee Baca, a man who has distinguished himself, if I can use that term, as a useful idiot for the Muslim Brotherhood Front organizations, notably the Council on American-Islamic Relations, and some of those that have been associated with or simply are working on behalf of the same goal as the Muslim Brotherhood, like the Muslim Public Affairs Council. He was asked, Sheriff Baca was, specifically about CARE's ties to the Muslim Brotherhood's franchise in Palestine known as Hamas. And the sheriff professed to know nothing of those ties. And when asked on cross-examination whether he was oblivious to the fact that the Department of Justice has found CARE to be tied to Hamas and indeed to the Muslim Brotherhood, that federal judges have confirmed on the basis of the evidence made available that indeed CARE is tied to Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood. Sheriff Baca demurred and simply said, well, if there is that evidence, then such individuals, such organizations ought to be prosecuted. Well, no kidding, Sheriff Baca. They certainly should be prosecuted. And a question that I'm very hopeful future hearings of the Homeland Security Committee will address is, why hasn't the Council on American-Islamic Relations been prosecuted for being tied to Hamas, for working on behalf of the Muslim Brotherhood, and specifically for fostering the effort to bring Sharia to America? And since it is a seditious ideology and totalitarian program explicitly designed to hollow out and ultimately destroy representative government and the civil liberties that are enshrined in our Constitution, there is every reason for such a prosecution to go forward. And we need to know, why hasn't it happened? Another insight from the hearings convened by Congressman Pete King, who, by the way, let me just say explicitly how much I admire his efforts and the resiliency he showed in the face of tremendous criticism and pressure to proceed with these hearings, to discuss the taboo topic of what role this kind of so-called leadership is playing in the Muslim American community to foster extremism, as he calls it, to enable it to thrive, and to reduce the ability of law enforcement to stop it and you know, penalize or otherwise put out of business those who are engaged in it. But another insight from these hearings was the fact that there are Muslims who wish to be part of the American dream, who do not wish to live under Sharia, who do not wish to impose this brutal, repressive, misogynistic, that is to say, women-hating program that is political and military and legal in character. A Somali father, or excuse me, uncle of a man who is recruited to Al-Shabaab and went to Somalia to wage jihad, was one of those who professed very poignantly his desire to live and prosper in America, an America that enables him to practice his religion, yes, but enables others to do so as well. And then, of course, there was Dr. Zudi Jasser, a man I've made clear I admire greatly, who has been working to try to offer an alternative to this sort of Sharia-dominating leadership and program in America. We need to hear more from such individuals and to find out what can be done to empower them and to weaken, if not absolutely put out of business, those who are seeking to suppress them and us. Clearly, the hearings yesterday also showed the need for more hearings, both in the Homeland Security Committee and in other committees with different jurisdictions. They need to dwell and drill down on this problem of Sharia as the source of our present difficulties. What differentiates Muslims who are so-called extremists from those who are part of the solution? We need to clearly understand that it constitutes a seditious program that is not protected religious practice. And we need most especially to be clear that if this does not get corrected, if Sharia is not precluded from taking hold in and taking over in America. We will go the route of Europe, in which speech is essentially prohibited, in which courts are imposing Sharia orders, and in which no-go zones are established, in which the law of the land, the Constitution of the United States here, is not practiced. We must not let that happen. Next up, Bing West talks about the wars we're fighting, among other things, to protect us from Sharia elsewhere around the world.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Michael Medved is asking Congress to simplify the corporate tax code for good reason.
This is a real problem. Of the 500 top Fortune companies, nearly 100 pay no taxes because they use various dodges
that have been written into the law by lobbyists.
And the President of the United States and Paul Ryan, the House Budget Chair,
and John Boehner, the Speaker of the House.
Everybody ought to work together to get rid of this stuff.
It's just wrong.
The Michael Medved Show. Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260. WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back and delighted to be joined by an old comrade in arms. He is a distinguished combatant, as a matter of fact, both in the literal sense of the word and in the war of ideas sense of the word. He is Bing West. We served together in the Reagan Defense Department. He is an Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Affairs. He also served in the United States Marine Corps during Vietnam, and he has been actively involved in the fight, as I say, both of the kinetic kind and of the intellectual kind, as an essayist, as an author, and as a firsthand observer of the war, particularly as it's been playing out in Iraq and Afghanistan since 9/11. He has also had at least one of his offspring, and I've lost track here, Bing, so correct me if there's more than one, serving in uniform as we speak. And we're delighted to have you back with us at Secure Freedom Radio, among other things, to talk about your marvelous new book, The Wrong War, Grit, Strategy, and the Way Out of Afghanistan. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
How many kids are there in uniform at the West?
Well, you're right. I have four children, and one of them chose to be a Marine infantry in recon. And So that's four generations of Marines that we've had.
An impressive contribution to our national security. We thank all of you for your service. Bing, I'd like to talk a little bit about the book, first of all. We'll venture further afield, I'm sure. But for starters, The Wrong War is a very interesting title. And I guess I'm interested specifically in whether it's the wrong war or whether it's being fought the wrong way, or perhaps both.
It's more the latter, Frank. It basically is that we chose to undertake a strategy of nation building and bring Afghanistan into the 21st century, and Afghanistan is the wrong war for that kind of a strategy.
Hmm. And that is because of the inherent character and culture of the place, or is it because the strategy itself was defective?
Both. In the first instance, of course, in Afghanistan, 31 million people, they belong to different tribes. The vast majority are not only uneducated, but simply don't read. And they're hurtling headlong into the 9th century. And that's the culture problem. The strategy problem is that we don't know how to build another nation, especially our military. And so for our military to undertake that, it didn't make any sense, because even now, if I went out to our battalion commanders and to our generals and said, okay, general, where's your handbook on how you build a nation? They'd admit they don't have one. They have something called the Counterinsurgency Handbook, which has so many recipes, it's like opening up a huge cookbook. But in the end, you walk away and you say, well, what kind of a meal am I supposed to be preparing?
Yeah. Meals ready to eat, most likely, for the folks at least. Is there confusion, Bing, as to whether, in fact, what the military is doing in Afghanistan is nation building? Does that begin the larger problem you've just sketched out, that we're not even clear that's the mission? Or is the mission clear, it's just how to execute it is hopelessly confusing?
That's a very good point, Frank, because it is that even if you talk to the troops, even if you talk to the generals, you're not even going to get one strategy. And Secretary Gates and Admiral Mullen, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, they baffle me, because every time they talk, they say something different. Indeed, now Gates is over there. He's at the same place that I visit, called Sangin. He's looking at the same battlefield, and he's drawing the opposite conclusions that I just drew. And he's saying that the Marines are over there now to degrade the Taliban. Well, that means you're back to killing. And that mission, I understand. Then he rushes on in the same sentence to say, and to give local governance a chance to grow. What the heck does that sentence mean? So we don't have a clear strategy.
But again, let me just drill down on this one point about nation building, because I know, you know, your son and his comrades have certainly been spending a prodigious amount of time trying to interact with the tribal and other local leaders and grow, you know, governing institutions and rebuilding infrastructure and the like. And yet, do you think that they believe their mission is in fact nation building, or is it simply something drawn from this cookbook, as you put it, of counterinsurgency that is mostly about winning hearts and minds and trying to stabilize the physical security environment for the troops, for the civilian populations, so that they're not beastly to us and they're not accommodating to the Taliban?
No, the troops have memorized the mantra that they are over there because they have four lines of operation. And every single battalion commander will say to you, I'm here in order to do much better at security, at economic development, at governance, and at the rule of law. So they've all memorized that. And many of the battalion commanders are actually spending more of their time on economic development and governance than they are on a wartime mission of security and going after the Taliban. The problem is, the root of it is, this is like developing with this counterinsurgency approach, and I had a combined action platoon in Vietnam, and I know quite a bit about what you really do to counter an insurgent. But this way of doing it is a benevolent theory, and the problem started with when we first went into the country. We went in with the objective of getting the terrorists who killed us at 9/11. But instead, this general didn't do a good job, general by the name of Franks, and he allowed most of them to escape into Pakistan. Then we stayed in Afghanistan and changed the mission because somebody said, in order to prevent the terrorists from again retaking Kabul and being in charge in Afghanistan, we must build a nation. And that was a bridge too far. Then to build a nation, General Petraeus and others wrote a book that was based on Rousseau's social contract. The contract was, we would provide some security to the people, and we give them an awful lot of money. And in return, the people would turn against and reject the Taliban. Now, what's happened for the last 10 years is that the people, being sensible, took one look at how tough the Taliban were, and they basically said, well, we'll take all the money the Americans want to give us, but they're crazy if they think we're going to fight their war for them. So we end up occasionally fighting the Taliban, giving away a lot of money, and then we say, golly, we don't seem to have an exit plan. We don't, because we can't build a government for other people. We can't do it. And until we acknowledge that and just get back to some basic missions, we're just creating a porridge over there, and our troops know that.
Yeah, and I do want to visit with you a little bit more about that particular question. You know, you've spent a lot of time, again, we're talking with former Assistant Secretary of Defense Bing West, a man who I have admired for a long time, but most especially for his willingness to put himself directly in harm's way to get the story, to find out what is going on with our troops, what they are being asked to do, how well they're doing it under very difficult circumstances, and where, as a result of their efforts, we find ourselves as a country. And Bing, I'd like to visit, and we're going to have to take a momentary pause here, but I'd like to visit with you on the other side of the break about how the troops are seeing all of this in Afghanistan. Then we want to touch a little bit on your take on what we should be doing there, and also a reflection on what's happened in Iraq. You have written extensively about that, again, from this vantage point of the folks in the firing positions, and your insights are tremendously appreciated, and we look forward, again, to an extended conversation with Bing West right after this. More on Afghanistan, more on the troops, more on what we should be doing in Iraq. Straight ahead.
To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, short day.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org.
A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Adopt Us Kids and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira. And like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined once again by former Assistant Secretary of Defense Bing West, a Marine combat veteran, a man who has taken that combat experience and brought it to all of us in a number of superb best-selling books, including most recently The Wrong War, Grit, Strategy, and the Way Out of Afghanistan. And Bing, just to follow up on the points that we were discussing before the break, tell us from the vantage point of a man who not only has a son in the Marines, but also has spent a lot of time reporting and taking stock in the trenches with our folks in Afghanistan. What are our fighting men and women making of all of this, and what's the condition of their morale, would you say?
Well, that's why I call the book Grit and First and Strategy Second, because the book isn't a policy wonk book. I get into the policy and the strategy, but basically, for the last 3 years, I've been going to the battlefields in the north and the south and just embedding with the platoons. And so I take the reader with me into these battles up in the north and in the south in order to show first what I learned about the fighting qualities of our troops today as opposed to when I fought with them, and that is that their grit, their willingness to go after the enemy is still intact. And I believe any strong nation must have a warrior ethos among its military. And when you lose that, you're in deep trouble. You know, if you become like France or Germany and you're really not willing to fight anymore. That hasn't happened to us. We may have a president now who's very wishy-washy, but our forces are still tough guys, and I show in battle after battle what happens, and I go through one particular chapter of this big fight, and then I hope the young man in it, Corporal Dakota Meyer, 21 years of age, who rallied the troops during it, they will receive the Medal of Honor. And so I try to show that the troops understand, they get it, but it's at the higher level, they don't get it. The troops understand that this is a war between them and the Taliban, and our objective should be to get the Afghan soldiers fighting that. At the higher level, though, there's still this hope that somehow we Americans are going to rally the Afghan people, even though we're a Christian nation and they're 8,000 miles away and they're a deeply Muslim nation. We're a heterogeneous group. They are divided into tribes. We speak English. They speak Pashto and Dari. How we convinced ourselves we could do this is beyond me. And I think I think we're settling down now and recognizing we're not going to do it, but no one's admitted that we're really changing our strategy.
Well, it seems as though, as you say, we're sort of slowly crawling up to that bar. We've got certainly an administration that has indicated that it's okay with the Afghan government engaging the Taliban, finding a way to bring them into government, and otherwise it sounds, at least to me, as though we're teeing up not just the preliminary and partial withdrawal that the president has said will begin next summer, but we're beginning, in fact, the unraveling of our position. And I guess if we could just cut to the chase on this, because I do want to take a couple of minutes talking about Iraq as well, Bing West, tell us what you would do in terms of a way out of Afghanistan.
Oh, at the end of my book, I simply say to people, now look, you've watched this for a long time. You've been with me on the journey in these battles. Now I'll tell you, and I show a special forces group at the end that I was with, and I said, this is the model we really should fall back to. Let's just say we're not going to give them money, because if you give people money for no good reason, you get nothing in return. We're going to get most of our troops out of there. We have many, many volunteers of very tough guys who would love to be the advisors. We don't lack volunteers. So we'll get back to us being the advisors, push the Afghan soldiers to the front, and let them fight the Taliban. And that war will go on for quite some time. But the Taliban will not seize Kabul, because we're too strong for that to happen by our air and our intelligence. And most of our troops are trying to build a nation, and I think that's a bridge too far and unnecessary. So I would strip it down and just continue the war at a very low cost and let those who really want to fight, and we have those tough guys, let them do it. And just the rest of this stuff, I just put in a box and say, okay, they're going to have to figure out their own ways. And they will. They will.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to a further visit with you about that, because my sense of it would be, Bing, that the enemy that we're confronting, especially with safe rear echelons in Pakistan and the support of the Pakistani government, will not long allow that kind of rear guard action to check them, and that it will be a matter of time, not perhaps, you know, in the very near future, but probably not in the very long term either, before the Taliban is pretty much back in charge, running the place, and I fear a serious set of reverses that will further encourage elsewhere. But
let me just say,
okay,
about that, Frank. What is different about the modern battlefield now that I saw? I'm just back from Sangin, and I'm just about to go tomorrow back there. But our air now for surveillance is better than the blimps they have over the Super Bowl. We have the entire battlefield covered now with air that can distinguish when somebody reaches into his pocket to talk onto a cell phone. And there is no way the Taliban can mass more than four before we can see them. And so the war has become a very, very different kind of concept than before, because it is impossible for them to mass. We just pick up all the signals. So I believe that even if we had many fewer forces, they can't get the momentum. They really can't. They can be pains in the neck in the rural area forever.
We'll see.
They can't pull people together.
We'll see. Quickly, we've got 2 minutes left. Bing West, tell me what your current reading is on Iraq. You've written the definitive book, I think, on the subject, The Strongest Tribe, War Politics and Endgame in Iraq. What is the endgame as you see it now?
In my book and now, I believe that Prime Minister Maliki is a selfish, arrogant, crafty person who overestimates himself. He has kept, Frank, the portfolio for himself as Minister of Defense, Minister of Interior, and Minister of Intelligence. And I believe that Iraq is going to have continued security problems, and it's going to have a continued friction between the Sunnis and the Shiites, because Prime Minister Maliki wants to be the next Mubarak. And so I expect that that country's going to have a very rough road.
And in that regard, Bing, tell us about Iran and the role it's playing in Iraq and the prospects if a fellow who has been closely tied to Iran for many years, namely Maliki, pulls off this kind of authoritarianism.
I believe it's inevitable that this other fellow, Sadr, who is genuinely a cat's paw of Iran, Sadr and Maliki are going to have another big clash, because Maliki, in the end, thinks that he's going to bow to no one, including the Iranians. But there are many influences now that he doesn't control. And so the Iranians will, through Sadr, sooner or later, in Iraq, mount a challenge to try to get more direct control through a puppet. I think they're more dangerous, though, Frank, right now in Afghanistan. I don't like what I'm seeing at all with the Iranians beginning to give rockets to the Taliban, because the next step that I think would confront this administration, I don't know what the administration would do, is if they ever gave surface-to-air missiles to the Taliban. That would be a game-changer. But our military would put tremendous pressure then upon the White House to take direct action against Iran.
Yeah. Well, it surprises me that hasn't happened so far, Bing, but I think you're absolutely right. This is the direction that an emboldened Iran is embarked upon, and we are going to find ourselves confronting it, I'm afraid, in some way or shape or another in the not-too-distant future. Thank you for your terrific work, Bing West, for your books and for your firsthand accounts of where we are and where we are going. And I hope you'll come back safely to us soon and report in on the latest from Afghanistan. Next up, we have Bill Gertz with his assessment of the new Chinese threat.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Nothing gets Mike Gallagher more upset than when the government tries to tell him how to live his life.
For the government to urge the Restaurant Association of America, or whatever it's called, oh, you got to start serving smaller portions.
The government doesn't belong there.
Stay out of our restaurants, stay out of our kitchens, stay out of our lives.
The Mike Gallagher Show.
It's infuriating to me.
Weekdays from 9 to noon on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there.
So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined by our regular Fridays, Bill Gertz. He is joining us from his post as the National Security reporter par excellence, long associated with the Washington Times. Now it's geopolitics editor, the author of numerous books, including several dealing with communist China and the threat that it represents to us. And I want to pick up on that, Bill Gertz. First of all, a proper welcome to you. Always glad to have you with us.
Good to be on the show.
With the appearance yesterday of Jim Clapper, the ever more controversial director of national intelligence before the Senate Armed Services Committee, as your colleague Gilad Lake has it in the Washington Times today, there was something, I guess, of astonishment on the part, at least of some of the members of the committee, about the warning that General Clapper very distinctly sounded about the threat he perceives from China and, to a slightly lesser degree, Russia in terms of their nuclear weapons program. Did this surprise you?
It was a little surprising because it seems as though there's some secret dictum within the administration never to highlight the threat from China, despite the fact that it is an increasing, especially their nuclear weapons arsenal, which I've reported on extensively, which is being taken, which is going on in secret. He was asked what were the most significant nation-state threats, and he rightly said China because of their nuclear arsenal. He was then pressured by the liberal chairman, Senator Carl Levin, to try and walk back, and then he tried to equivocate by saying, well, they didn't have the intention. But, you know, intentions can change. You know, in the military, you have to go by capabilities. If you have long-range nuclear missiles that can hit the U.S., especially in a communist country, you have to be concerned that that they could be used in some scenario or some crisis.
Yeah, no, I think it's the first dictum of intelligence, Bill Gertz, as you know, that you focus on capabilities, not on intentions. And the capabilities, I guess what's happening here, Bill, is that we've seen the evidence accumulating of the Chinese nuclear buildup, to focus on that for a moment, in such a way that it's no longer possible to ignore it or downplay it. Is that basically what you think is going on?
Absolutely. And the other concern is that the Chinese refuse to discuss any details of their nuclear program, which is going on in secret. They have underground facilities in the western central part of China. The U.S. has tried to engage the Chinese, and one of the very clear revelations in one of the cables that was released recently was a Chinese official saying, look, we have no interest. It's not in our interest to disclose anything to you about our nuclear arsenal. In other words, they're keeping it secret from the U.S., and they won't tell us why or to what extent they're building up these forces.
Presumably, that cable is one of the same with the one that you report on in your Inside the Ring column this week, which is really required reading, folks. This is Bill Gertz's signature column. You can find it at WashingtonTimes.com or GertzFile.com. That's GERTZFile.com. And Bill, tell us about this apparent new threat that was identified in this cable.
Yes, this is very, very significant disclosure. It was revealed in a cable last month that China's anti-satellite missile, it's called an SC-19, direct-ascent ASAT missile, it was used in a test of an anti-missile defense system. In other words, this is a dual-capable missile that can shoot down satellites as well as missiles in a missile defense system, which makes it a greater strategic threat, and it gives China a greater strategic capability than they've had before. So we're seeing the emergence of a new strategic capability in communist China.
Yeah, and this has not been acknowledged by the Chinese, nor, as best I can tell, publicly discussed by the U.S. government. Bill, and this reminds me of a time many years ago when I was working in the Reagan Defense Department, and we were asked to prepare a study for President Reagan of the inherent impossibility of putting in place an effective, verifiable anti-satellite treaty, that is to say, one that would ban all, you know, anti-satellite activities, weapons in space, and that sort of thing. And this was one of the points that we made at the time, was you could conceal, as an anti-missile system, a capability that would have inherent anti-satellite capabilities. And I guess what's happening here before our very eyes is the Chinese, who have endlessly been promoting this idea of banning weapons in space, are putting into their fields, into their inventory, exactly that kind of dual-use capability.
Yes, and again, this highlights the outrageous duplicity on the part of the Chinese government, where they have vocally and in many international forums come out and opposed U.S. missile defenses, as well as the idea of anti-satellite weapons, which the U.S. hasn't done since 1984, but which we demonstrated a capability as early as 2008 when we shot down a falling satellite with a modified missile interceptor.
Yeah, from one of our sea-based platforms, the Aegis ships. Bill, let me take the remaining time we have to switch gears a little bit to Iran. The Clapper testimony signaled, at least to some, not only a downplaying of the threat from Iran and North Korea, for that matter, in terms of their nuclear capabilities, in favor of, as we just talking about, these states that are likely to produce vastly more large and ominous nuclear and other capabilities. But in the process, what has the Obama administration been saying about the previous threat assessment of the Iranian nuclear weapons program, and what does it suggest to you? Is their view of the inevitability, if not actually the acceptability, of Iran being nuclear armed?
Well, it's becoming more obvious to all observers, both in and out of government, that the Iranians are on a path towards nuclear weapons development. Yet the U.S. intelligence community has saddled itself with basically a bogus national intelligence estimate. This is a major interagency estimate, which is supposed to represent the views of all 16 spy agencies. This was done in 2007, and it made the claim that Iran had halted work on its nuclear weapons program in 2003. Under pressure from policymakers, they have basically tried to step back from that or modify that. It's all been done in secret, and yet the National Intelligence Council, which does these estimates, is trying to protect its credibility by still holding on to this false 2007 estimate.
Hmm. So we're getting, in a way, the worst of both worlds. They're kind of fiddling around at the margins with the actual national intelligence estimation, as it should be, of a real and growing threat. And on the other, they're basically covering their behinds in trying to stave off the very justified criticism from among others, your good self, about a highly politicized process. This is really worrying, and I think it speaks volumes about where our intelligence services are at the moment. Bill, speaking of where things are at the moment, in your Inside the Ring column, you surprised me, I must tell you, because I had thought that some time ago the Obama administration had moved the USS Enterprise from Red Sea area into the area off of the coast of Libya in presumably preparation for dealing with some eventuality there. And yet you've indicated that's not the case. Quickly, tell us what's going on.
Frank, moving a carrier is usually the step one in any crisis or even emerging crisis. Yet the Obama administration has refused to do that. The Enterprise Strike Group, according to Admiral Gary Roughead, the chief of naval operations, he told a Senate hearing earlier this week that the aircraft carrier strike group would remain in the Red Sea and that it has not yet been ordered to waters off Libya. Obviously, this would be the critical component of doing any kind of military intervention, and it would also be necessary for humanitarian evacuation as well.
Yeah. It signals to me both an unwillingness on the part of the Obama administration to even put itself in a position where it has options to exercise in this kind of circumstance. And it also may be, Bill Gertz, and this is subject for another day's talk, evidence of their desire to downplay the value of these very important aircraft carriers. We'll look forward to visit with you further on this, Bill Gertz, and much, much more in the weeks ahead. And thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to all of you for joining us this week. I hope you will do so again next, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope, again, you'll do so next week as well. Over and out.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.